You are listening to the Tricorder Transmissions, episode 114. And now, here are Jeff and Ian.
Hello again, and welcome to the Tricorder Transmissions original series coverage of Gold Key Comics, issue number 25, Dwarf Planet. I am your host, Jeff Hewlett, and with me is my co-chair for the Gold Key Comics series, Mr. Ian Adams. How are you, Ian?
Doing well. How about you?
Awesome. Doing great. Looking forward to talking through some more of these bizarre comics with you. This one's another one of these really strange issues, and I think we were talking before we started this recording about how maybe over optimistic we got after issue after the Mummies of Hatius 7.
Perhaps.
I'm gonna keep my hopes up that we're gonna have some gems coming up here. So not to flip the cards too early on this issue, we've got a lot to talk about. So it is another one by Mr. Arnold Drake, and the artist again is Alberto Giolitti. He has not changed. It was published in July of 1974, oddly getting kind of close to my birth date. Pretty cool. And 32 pages. Star date is 1924.8, still somewhere in those 2260s. Do you have any information on the cover art? Is it still the same guy?
Yeah, it's George Wilson.
This one's a little bit of a different style. It looks the people look about the same, but the cover itself is a bit different than previous covers.
It kind of feels almost more Twilight Zone-y, and I think it's just because of that giant eye.
Yeah, I wasn't sure what that was, if that's some kind of an eyeball looking through a lens, or if that's some sort of a space eye. This is a tough cover to to decipher. Yeah. There's so much going on. You've got a red shirt guy climbing up what looks to be a needle, which is a little bit strange. Right. It looks like it could be Scotty from the cover, but we can never be too sure. With these covers.
It's one of those things where everything on the cover makes sense after you read the issue, but...
Yeah, that's a good point. Before you read the issue, like, what the heck is this?
Right.
So there's also a guy in a gold shirt who... I don't think that looks like Kirk at all, but I think we're going to find out.
No, but he's got the rank stripes for Kirk.
He does. That's one good thing about it. And he's getting tangled up by a bunch of tether lines that are coming out of these little tiny... spaceships, and it looks like there's a couple of little guys laying on the ground pulling some of these ropes down. It's almost like a sort of a Gulliver's Travels scenario. But I didn't get the whole burning yellow sphere part. He's inside a burning yellow sphere.
Right, and that's yet another thing that makes sense once the issue has gone on, right? Because that's supposed to be the sun of this planet, but...
Yeah, good observation. We're getting ahead of ourselves again, but yeah, that is the explanation. Right. But looking at the cover, if you were standing at the shelf looking at a comic shelf and you saw this cover, this would make no sense to you.
No, it wouldn't. But I gotta say, it's a really appealing design, like the just the composition of it and all of the sort of weird things going on. I think that if I did see this, you know, in a drugstore, as you probably would have seen them at the time, I would have been like, okay, yeah, let's check this one out. This looks weird enough.
Yeah, it's only a quarter. Why not?
Right.
Give it a shot.
It's only a week's pay.
Yeah, and there's a little blurb on the cover here, a little one-liner like they have on all of them. And it says, miniature people under a strange sun threaten the lives of the Enterprise crew. Doesn't give you much to go on, but once again, our crew is in danger. As they are in many, many issues. So any other thoughts on the cover, Ian?
Well, just one observation. It's worth noting that this is one of those rare issues at least the copy that you and I have, where the logo, instead of being Gold Key, is under the Whitman imprint.
Yes, Whitman. Isn't that the parent company of Gold
Key? Right. Yep.
Yeah, I wonder what that was about.
Yeah, I don't know. Because from what I've been able to find out, all of these issues where it appears like that, you can find covers, you know, with either the Whitman or the Gold Key logo. So it's like they made versions of each.
Hmm.
And I'm not sure if it was like, you know, a different market
thing
or you know, who it was distributed to or anything like that.
Hmm.
I'm still a little befuddled by it, but I do think it's interesting whenever it comes up because it seems rare.
Yeah, I picked up on it, but I wasn't sure if that was something that was going to be something going forward, or if it was a kind of a company change, or but I had read a bit about Whitman Publishing, and Gold Key was one of the subsidiaries, so kind of made sense. It's an interesting little logo, it's a little smiley face on it with a big W and the name of the company written in the W. So almost looks like a logo for like a kid's toy store. Yeah, like Child World. There used to be a store called Child World. It's not around anymore. It was a Toys R Us competitor. And I think it had a similar logo or something kind of close to that, like a round globe or something. But getting off track. anything else?
We never do that.
Oh, no, not
on no. Let's get back on track.
Okay, good call. So we're going to open up this issue and we're going to start talking about it. So we're going to give you guys the spoiler warning, as we always do. If you feel like tuning out and reading the comic and then coming back in, feel free to do that. And we'll be waiting here for you when you get back. But we're going to start talking about the teaser page for Dwarf Planet in 3, 2, 1.
Engage.
So now here we are with, once again, a teaser page that is far and away different than what we saw on the cover. I mean, this is really, really weird, but I really like this.
Yeah.
It's so it bizarre.
Is. Yes. Like,
and were you thrown off by the fact that it's not called The Dwarf Planet? It's just called Dwarf Planet.
It doesn't
flow for me. I would have thought it would sound better, The Dwarf Planet, but
yeah, it does work for me. In light of the recent, you know, planetary classifications, I had an idea that maybe that, you know, when I first read the title, that this issue was about a completely different thing. That quickly went away as soon as, you know, you get further down the page and you listen to who certainly already appears to be Scotty, just based on the kind of accent they're trying to give him.
Hmm. So this page depicts a human being wearing a polka dotted loincloth, blue with white polka dots, and he's hurling rocks at what appears to be some sort of a worm. He's calling it a hairy-legged microbe. So I'm not quite sure exactly what it is at this point. We'll find out later what it is, much later, what it is.
Yeah.
But it's a non-humanoid alien, so you know me and my love for non-humanoid aliens in Star Trek. So that immediately grabbed me. And he's throwing rocks at it, and it's making a noise that I'll let you do the noise. You're better at these noises than I am. Great. That was perfect. Yeah. Yeah, so it's shrieking in pain as these rocks are being thrown at it by this humanoid. And as Ian said, it's pretty obvious that they're trying to make us understand this is Scotty just by the way they're making him speak. And, you know, Gold Key in the past has been quite famous for mimicking Scotty's accent in text. So The bubble says, what kind o' way is this for a lad like me to be dying, trampled by a hairy-legged microbe? And notice I'm not doing the accent.
Right, yeah. You did it about as well as they wrote it.
Yes. So, yeah, that's supposed to be Scotty's accent. And it's got the same haircut, but the profile and the musculature doesn't look Scotty-ish to me. But that's okay.
Yeah.
So again, there's also a text box that gives us a little bit of a teaser in the upper right corner that says, "Come along with the crew of the Starship Enterprise as they race to solve the mystery of a world in which all life is rapidly shrinking, oblivion." Scary.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah, what are we in store for here? So, this to me is a really cool teaser page. I really, really enjoyed this teaser page. And, you know, after looking at the cover and flipping it open and seeing something that I did not expect, I was hoping that this issue was going to feature these kind of gross-looking alien things more prominently. I was sad that it didn't.
It's kind of another thing. We've talked about it before, where with the Gold Key issues, they've kind of had a problem where they tend to just meander through the first two-thirds of the stories and then try to jam everything into that last third. And this thing, spoiler alert, it shows up in the last third. So that's why we don't really get to see a whole lot of them, which is kind of sad.
I am sad to say that this issue is another one of those Gold Keys where they drag their feet through the first two thirds, or even more than the first two thirds, and then really go gangbusters trying to wrap the story up. So once again, we're gonna be lamenting the fact that the end wraps up so quickly. So another spoiler alert, but. Anything else you want to throw out there about this teaser page before we jump in?
No, just that, you know, it's cool.
It is.
But other than that, let's get to it.
All right. So, you know what? Actually, before we do, one more thing that was struck me as odd is that in this teaser page, it looks like this scene is happening in some sort of a desert, right?
Yeah,
it does. And then we find out that it's actually not a desert. That really threw me for a loop when we get to the part where we find out what this scene really is. So bear with us. We'll get there. But I was a little bit disappointed that this wasn't some sort of a big battle happening in this arid climate.
Between our loincloth Enterprise crew.
All right. So we are going to jump into the issue proper here. And starts out, of course, with a captain's log, which I'll quickly read off. It says, "Captain's log, stardate 1924.8, Lieutenant Uhuru," misspelled again, "chief comm officer, has detected intelligent radio signals from the little explored area of space, sector 119D!" Exclamation point.
So does that mean that the radio signals came from intelligent people, or that the radio signals themselves were intelligent?
I'm taking it as the radio signals themselves were intelligent. That's the way it's written.
It's the only way that makes sense.
It is. Captain Kirk, Spock, and Uhura take a shuttlecraft down to the surface of a planet in Sector 119D in order to investigate these radio signals. They discover that there is a highly advanced city, and they land right in the middle of it, but find that the city is deserted. The landing party kind of walks around a bit, winds up in a little town nearby, which happens to be a little smaller than the place that they landed, and finds that town empty as well. So they set out and keep exploring more of the planet on foot, instead of getting back in the shuttlecraft, by the way, and discover that there's another city less than a mile away from the first two, and it's even smaller. It's like a miniature city. So, it's really tiny. It's really tiny.
It's like those Russian dolls. You just
The nesting
smaller
dolls,
ones within smaller ones.
The buildings and the trees are waist high, and there are abandoned vehicles all over the place. So, let's see. In the city, that city is abandoned, and Uhura exclaims it's a midget city. And they're doing some theorizing about.
That's a little.
Yeah, it's on the nose. They start to theorize a little bit about there having been potentially two to three different size races living all within proximity of each other, size-wise, meaning, you know, taller than than the others, but they're confused by where all the intelligent life has gone and where the radio signals are coming from, and they decide to split up to explore more of the territory and agree to meet back in 3 hours. So Kirk goes off on his own, and as he's walking around, he sees a miniature flying ship fly past him, and it kind of flies off into the distance a little bit and lands behind a hill, and he starts to move towards where it landed to try to figure out what's going on. He assumes it's some kind of a toy, and he finds it parked on the ground and picks it up and is still looking at it and trying to figure out what it is and trying to find out who was piloting it. He assumes that it's being remotely controlled. He picks it up, looks at it, but it flies out of his hand. He's unable to hold it. So a couple minutes later, a large group of these ships appears and begins firing tether lines at Kirk that have weights on the end and start to tangle him up and tear him to the ground. So they wind up getting him on the ground a lot like Gulliver's Travels, like we said earlier. So this is the scene from the cover. And as Kirk is struggling to get free, a soldier walks up and shoots him in the face with some sort of gas, which immobilizes Kirk. And the tiny guy says, tells Kirk not to struggle. He says every muscle in his body has been immobilized. And he is talking to Kirk with some sort of a device that's on his forehead. He tells him that his name is General Kwai, and Kirk is now his prisoner. So we're going to stop here. This is page 7. So we're going to stop and talk a little bit about this. Again, Uhura's name is misspelled. I think there's 2 issues in a row now.
Yeah.
Where it's Uhuru.
Yeah, misspelled, and she's white again.
And she's white again, yes. Good call.
I'm starting to think that maybe this Uhuru is actually a completely different person.
Oh, just so happens to be Uhura. A communications officer, though.
Right, and it happens to wear those same hoop earrings and wear the hair the same way. But you know, like it's it seems to make sense because they're at least consistent about getting the name wrong whenever she looks wrong.
Well, we'll see if it continues in the next issue. I think she appears again. So we'll talk about that when we get there. One thing that I was going to ask you if you noticed, and I'm not sure, it's hard to see, but on page 1, well, actually, wait a minute. I think for us, it's page 3. It's actually okay. The first page of the story, but we see the shuttlecraft flying in, and I want to say that the registry number is NCC-1701-7, but it could be 1701-1 with kind of a wacky-looking 1 at the end. But if it's 1701-7, what ship is that, I wonder? It's not the Galileo. That wasn't the Galileo's number, was it?
Yeah, that was the Galileo's number, NCC-1701-7.
All right.
I'm looking at it from when it was landed on Taurus 2 during the Galileo 7 episode.
Very cool. So we've got another appearance of the Galileo, unnamed, but with the correct registry number. So pretty cool.
Yeah.
Pretty cool.
And you can kind of see on the art where the name is, right? You know, that kind of slanted line in the front.
Yep. Too small to read, but it's there. And the shuttlecraft, of course, is the wrong color. It's green with yellow nacelles, which is
a little odd. Yeah. I'm going with it. It was shaded, like it was passing in front of a building, and so the color was cast. But it's a little weird. But the shuttle itself, like the shape of it, it's pretty good.
It's pretty close. Yeah. I think the door is a little bit high on the side of it, but it might be tough to get in and out of once it's landed. But that's okay. We can jump.
A plus for effort.
So it appears, although it doesn't turn out to be, it appears we've got yet another dead or dying civilization on our hands.
Right.
More deserted
cities. It's so weird.
Man, who would have thought?
In a gold key, no less.
Yeah, I know. It's
it is interesting that they take the time to, you know, wander through this abandoned, you know, civilization. And it's kind of interesting, right? Because the big place that's only a little bit smaller than them, you know, like the first place that they come to is the largest, and then each city that they come to gets progressively smaller. Mm-hmm. And the first one is like really advanced. It's got rockets and stuff. And then the second one they go to has a more kind of depression era, I want to say.
Yeah, the architecture changes between each one. Yeah.
Right. And then even like the last one is kind of medieval, except it's got cars that are obviously from like the, you know, 50s, which is a little weird, but kind of makes sense within the story. But I did think that was a really interesting thing, that the smaller they go, it's almost like the further back in time they're going, you know?
Hmm. That's a good point. Yeah, the when they get to, let's see, page 4, the final panel, when they're in what Uhura calls the Midget City. I don't know what that word really fits, because the doors of the houses that they're standing next to are smaller than Kirk's boot, which is right next to them. So, I mean, even if there were people there, they would be much, much smaller than what they would have called a midget in the 70s here.
Right.
On Earth.
Yeah.
They'd be more like little action figure size people.
Yeah. Like, you know, you play with your Mego dolls in this city. Your Mego Star Trek dolls.
They call the issue the Dwarf Planet, but now they're talking about midget cities. And I'm a little bit confused by the naming of the issue versus what they actually wind up calling the little city. So I would have thought they would call it Dwarf City, but
yeah, it's a midget city with dwarfed trees.
Quite strange. Page 5, I love the use of the word flotilla by Kirk.
Right, for a flying squadron.
Yeah, I was a little bit surprised to see that used in there. Kirk's exact line is, and he says Great Scott, which I don't recall Kirk ever saying Great Scott, but he says Great Scott, there's a whole flotilla of them now coming straight for me. And did you find it odd that Kirk assumes that these ships are being controlled by children? Like, that was the conclusion that he immediately jumped to. The fact that we've seen, you know, miniature little houses, why wouldn't he jump to the conclusion that there's people flying those ships? He just saw tiny little houses and tiny little cars.
Right.
Now he's seeing tiny little ships. It only stands to reason that there's little people inside them.
Yeah. I mean, they're even hypothesizing on the page immediately before that there might have been different races of different sizes for each of the different sized cities, one of which was the size of, you know, that rocket, like the scale of that rocket. And none of them were of a size, you know, of a scale comparable with Kirk and the crew. So it's completely weird that he would just assume that it's a children. My first thought would be, oh, hey, maybe this is one of the, you know, little people who live here. One of the Lilliputians, you know?
Yeah, that really threw me for a loop. And did it bother you, too, that Kirk is pretty much telegraphing everything that's going on here? He's describing in detail everything that he's doing.
Yes. Like, he is Captain Exposition.
Exactly. I mean, every panel on these couple of pages where Kirk is walking around, he's telling us exactly what he's doing, even though we can see it. It was so funny to me. I was kind of chuckling. Even when the ship flies out of his hand, it's taking off. I can't hold on to it. Right. Like, who's he saying this to?
Yeah, he's literally all alone in the middle of this wilderness by himself.
A toy rocket, amazingly detailed, still warm, too. Then the child who flew it must be nearby. I'll wait here until he comes for it.
And of course it's a he.
Of course. Of course. Oh, man. So this wraps up, this section wrapped up with Kirk being captured by the General Kwai. And I, you know, the fact that all of these ships exist and they have these bolas. Yeah, bolas, right? Now, you would think that the fact that these ships exist, they built them for a specific purpose, to take down giants. So are we assuming that other giants have shown up on this planet before and they realized that this was enough of a problem that they needed to build ships with weapons especially to capture them and take them down? I mean, what other reason would they have to build these in the first place?
Yeah, and not to get too far ahead, but on the very next page, you kind of hints that that might have happened in their past, that mm-hmm. that there were other, you know, larger people and that they've encountered them before.
Interesting theory. Well, we'll see how it pans out once we get past. Do you have anything else you want to say about this section before we move on?
Well, I did kind of like the, you know, it is a very Buck Rogers-y rocket.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of interesting because, you know, this issue came out in 74. And by 1974, you very rarely saw rockets looking like those sort of V2 World War II rockets with the fins and everything. Like, by this time, when people think of rockets, it's, you know, the giant Atlas rockets and stuff like that, you know. So I kind of like that just because I've always had a soft spot for that aesthetic. And so it was kind of neat that they did that in the first place. That's all. Just that, you know, nice little nod.
It is. It's a nice nod. I'm not sure if this was, I mean, I'm assuming that this was just Alberto's taste because, you know, we've seen some of these interesting cities and ships and other issues that he draws
yeah.
that have that similar aesthetic. So that must have been his preference for drawing these things. But I think it fits really well in here. It gives it a yeah. nice little stylization. There's the one frame, it is on page 6, the top frame, where it's got this yellow kind of explosion in the sky type thing, and the ships are all flying around Kirk. And you see some of the bola lines coming out, and you have some cool mm-hmm. sound effects written there. And Kirk is telling us that they've opened fire, shooting heavy stranded wires.
Which we can clearly see.
That's a great scene. I absolutely love that. I love the position yeah. that Kirk is in, and I love the ships are going in every which direction. Really well done. You know, they didn't need necessarily 4 panels to show Kirk getting captured by these ships. But I think that the first one there is absolutely awesome. And I'd love to have a big blown up wallpaper of that one.
Yeah, that would be kind of cool, right?
Yeah.
I do think that this is, you know, getting back to that point of taking their time, taking too much time telling the story in the first 2/3. This whole section, I think you could have done in 4 pages max, but I'd probably have shot even for 3.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. And, you know, Kirk getting captured, seeing the first ship and then getting captured is like 1, 2, 3, 4-ish pages.
Yeah.
Just that. you know, we could have used a little more of that space to reclaim, but. Well, it's gold key for you.
Yeah, and it's just kind of like storytelling has certainly, in comics anyway, has certainly evolved over the years. And a lot of that, I would say, came, you know, because of people like Jack Kirby, you know, who had a much more economical style and went by that cinematic rule of show, don't tell. And I think that, you know, these writers and artists who were still working in that era that was, you know, kind of towards the beginning of when that was starting to really be a thing, hadn't quite gotten into that yet. And I think that that's what it's reflective of.
I would definitely agree with that. So we are moving on. We're starting up on page number 8, which is, I think, 7 for you guys out there listening if you're reading a physical copy of this. And we are picking up where Kirk has been captured. And he's kind of having a little bit of a dialogue here with this Kwai gentleman. And he's kind of being taunted a little bit. And Kwai is telling him that, you know, because he's a giant and there'll be other ones coming just by the fact that he's seen Kirk already. So he's going to take him back to his people. He doesn't want his small race to become slaves to the giants or pets or sideshow freaks in his name. So Kirk gets strapped to a wooden apparatus with little wooden wheels on it, and they roll him. Actually, this is interesting because there's two cranes that lift Kirk up,
right,
and then put him on this wooden apparatus. So a little bit of a strange use of technology. And anyway, Kirk is rolled back to the city and brought in front of a president who gives him a little bit on a little bit of what's going on here and lets him know that once everyone there was as tall as Kirk and they were and had lived a very happy life, everybody was joyous until some explosions around their sun, fantastic, intense explosions rocked their planet, and their lives changed from that point on. Suddenly, they all started to shrink with each passing day. They tried to investigate what was going on to see if they can figure out how to stop it, but the shrinking problem continued. So they built themselves the second city on their planet, which they're calling Farah 2. And the next generation was forced to build an even smaller city called Farah 3 to accommodate the smaller and smaller people. So the old cities wound up being museums of their past. So in time, their scientists did figure out what the cause was, but by then it was too late. So their ships were much too small to reach the sun. And even if they did know how to stop the rays, they couldn't have done it anyway. So each generation grows successively smaller. And in time, she says, they'll all be microscopic. So all their advanced tools and machines will be lost and they will essentially vanish. So Uhura steps up and suggests that using the Enterprise to transport the inhabitants of the planet Kujal away, but the president refuses and their people are too proud to leave their home world. They don't want to give up and retreat. So Kirk offers to help resolve the situation and the president takes some time to think about it. Meanwhile, she allows the Enterprise crew to meet up with each other, and we find that Spock and Uhura were stashed underneath the stage there. So that was pretty sad. But we'll get to that in a second. I'm sure we're going to discuss that a little bit. So Kirk proposes that they fly close to the sun and gather samples of the rays and study them and hope they can figure out how to reverse the process. But of course, going that close to the sun will cause themselves to shrink at a much more rapid rate. So the closer they get, the faster they'll shrink. So the president and the general Kwai have been listening in and they agree to the plan. So Kwai demands, though, that a hostage be left behind to make sure the Enterprise isn't just is going to escape and leave them in the lurch. So Uhura steps up and volunteers to be the hostage. So we're going to stop here on page 14. And we'll discuss some of those things that have been happening here. And let's see. I thought page 9, panel 1, when Kirk is captured, he says the only thing he regrets was that he couldn't get a warning to Spock and Uhura. I thought it was really strange that that was the one thing he regretted. He didn't regret, you know, not running.
Yeah,
when he saw the ships coming, he didn't regret not fighting back harder or swatting the ships out of the sky, but he regrets not getting the warning out.
Yeah, and that actually, I was kind of waiting for that because in that whole sequence, remember you were just saying that it took like, you know, 4 pages from the spotting of that first rocket ship to, you know, him being, you know, taken down and immobilized. And it's only three panels before that last page, on page six for everyone else, that he even tries to use his communicator to alert the others as to what's going.
Yeah, good point. He doesn't actually pull the communicator out until he's already tied down.
Yeah, I would have been like, as soon as he sees that flotilla coming towards him, I would have been like, Scotty or Spock, Uhura, there's, you know, this a whole bunch of rocket ships coming towards me. You know, like by then, you know, he would have had enough time to do things like, you know, let them home in on his position and stuff like that. He didn't even have to be in that situation in the first place, captured, you know?
Exactly. Or at least he could have signaled the ship and let them know what his position was.
Right.
But what's the protocol?
Yeah. But of course, the reason he doesn't even end up getting an answer from Uhura or Spock is because they're underneath the president.
Oh man, that was funny. I did not expect to see that. The little curtain gets pulled up and we see Uhura and Spock laying face down on their stomachs underneath the stage.
Yeah.
Sad very scene. Very sad scene. I thought it was interesting that on page 9 on the third panel, you see a thought bubble on over Kirk's head where he is shocked to see, and he says he's thinking a woman leader when he sees the president is female. But it's not a bad surprise. He said it's a more advanced world than many. But I thought it was interesting that they called that out, that he, you know, they put a balloon up there to let us know that Kirk was shocked by that.
Pretty forward thinking there for 1974.
And let's see, beta gas. Kirk has been sprayed by beta gas, and there's an antidote.
Yeah, presumably alpha gas would have killed him, and gamma gas probably would have just...
turned him into the Hulk.
There you go. Nice.
So, yeah, more. But, you know, the fact that there's a thing called beta gas that paralyzes giants, and there's an antidote that they have on hand, more of an indication that they've done this before.
Exactly. Yeah, and even just that they had that rolling wooden platform thing just on standby. Yeah, like it certainly seems that there is a history with, as we would think of ourselves, normal-sized people, as they would think of giants.
Yes.
And I kind of wish that they had, gone into... Because you remember the past few issues, there have been a few kind of flashback scenes. Where they kind of just describe the past of the planet. And I kind of wish that had been the flashback for this, you know, because they spend their flashback going on to how they just got smaller and smaller. But I kind of want to learn about, you know, how these people kind of decided that people who were giants would make them slaves or household pets or worse, sideshow freaks. Yeah. And, and I kind of imagined that General Kwai here was kind of like, what was his name? Aldo in the later Planet of the Apes movies.
Okay.
Right. Where he was the general who was fighting to make sure that, you know, that the apes never became slaves and pets and all that again. And, that he's kind of got that same role. And I kind of feel like maybe this society didn't even have a military until, you know, these previous giants came and all that. And I don't know. I mean, that's all that I just picked up just from those subtle hints that they dropped. And I kind of felt like that was the more interesting sort of backstory that I wish they had flashback to.
That's a great point, and I agree. I think that would have been a much more interesting and fun story to read through is the battles with these past giants and how they've gotten so good at catching them, right? And why they have all of these machines and spaceships and cranes to lift them up. and place them on the big rolling wooden carts. And I think that would have been much more interesting.
Yeah. And it would have created some interesting conflict, right? Because then you'd have a little more insight into why these, you know, little people want to subjugate and or at least subdue and maybe imprison or whatever the Enterprise crew. And it would have been kind of a struggle. It's not quite the word that I mean, but like when the Enterprise crew, you know, Kirk and them, when they come up with the idea of like, hey, I know, let's just go out to the sun and like figure out like how to reverse this thing. Like it just kind of seems like, well, you know, they've been really mean to us, but yeah, we'll just go out and do it. You know, we do science stuff all the time. We'll just figure it out, you know, done. Right. But like they could have had more of a conflict, right? Like, because they end up really readily convincing, you know, the general and the president both.
Yeah, it didn't take much.
Yeah. Whereas had they gone into that backstory a little bit, then you could have had them playing off, you know, being a bit more resistant to that idea, you know, to the idea of trusting these giants.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I feel like it would have made for a more interesting story.
Once again, we're rewriting Gold Key.
Yeah, it's what I do.
Maybe we should start writing our own Trek comics. Oh, wait, you are.
That's right.
You are. Page 10, panel 2. Another one of my favorite Gold Key features. A disembodied head tells a story.
Right.
I love it. So you get the disembodied head, or the bust, rather, of the president, because you've got the neck and shoulders there as well. And she's kind of looking sternly off into the distance as she attempts to tell the story, regaling the subdued Enterprise away team with the story. So that's one of the Gold Key things. It doesn't happen every issue, but when it does happen, it's very special. Last time it was Kirk's disembodied head.
Yep.
So I look forward to seeing more of them.
And we will, I'm sure.
So here's a science problem that I had with this issue.
Oh, boy.
I'm sure you know where I'm going with this. Page 11, panel 2 tells us that radio waves created by the explosions on the sun are causing people to shrink. You know what? No.
Yeah.
Why could they not have picked a different kind of waves? They could have just made one up, for God's sakes. They've done it in a million Trek episodes before.
Yeah, and even in other Gold Keys, yeah.
Ah, like radio waves, man. Come on. We're bombarded with radio waves all day long in our lives, and we don't shrink. So I don't get the use of radio waves here.
It's just something that, like, maybe they meant to say radiation of some kind, but then, you know, like, it's a really densely packed word balloon, and maybe they just ran out of space. I don't know. I'm trying to be generous but yeah, it's really hard to get past.
It is, and I don't want people out there to think that we're just bashing these comics, but this is a serious question that popped up in my head. I'm like, that's such a weird choice, because they've gone, in previous issues, they've gone out of their way to try to make, you know, science at least somewhat reasonable and plausible.
Yeah, or at least unknown.
Right, and you pointed some of these things out in the past, so this one really kind of just made me grimace when I read it. Like, oh, come on. We couldn't have just picked a different word than radio. It could have been anything. It could have been like radio waves or something. It could have been even close to radio, but just, you know, make something up.
And it's also really weird how they're like, well, we don't know maybe it's something with their son that's doing this. Oh, well, maybe if we could alter a star. And then Spock's like, well, quite impossible. You know, we could never do that. And even if the entire universe got together, nobody could do that, which is wrong, you know, because we see people do that in Star Trek, you know.
Oh, yeah.
But then, you know, Kirk's like, well, obviously the only hope lies in understanding these waves. So we know nothing about these waves. And then, you know, he mentions it's on page 13. There's a panel of Kirk and Uhura. And she's saying, well, have you thought what these rays might do to us? And he's like, well, probably shrink our cells as it did theirs. And the closer we get, the faster the process. How do you know that when you already admitted that you don't know anything about these rays other than that they're shrinking these people over generations? That's the sort of thing that you want to fly to the sun to collect data on in the first place to learn. You know, don't. Yeah, that just struck me as really weird.
Yeah, I agree. And the panel immediately following that one, they use a machine that they call an audio magnifier to listen in on Kirk, Spock, and Uhura's conversation. The little people are using this audio magnifier. Isn't that an amplifier?
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. Yeah.
Magnification is a visual term.
Right.
Usually doesn't apply to audio. I was scratching my head at that one. So we've got radio waves that are caused by explosions on a sun, and we've got an audio magnifier. So a little strange use of terminology in this one. But I think one really redeeming thing that I think this comic does, and we were just lamenting the treatment of Uhura in the previous issue, I think that Uhura is very well redeemed in this issue. She's heroic. She's much more intelligent. I think the fact that she steps up and volunteers to be the hostage is awesome.
Yeah, she even helps them brainstorm, like, you know, what to do with the sun, you know, the mission to the sun and all of that.
Yep.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
She's a lot more the kind of Uhura that we expect.
Exactly. So very happy to see that they're utilizing Uhura as a useful and intelligent character in this issue, as which they failed to do in some previous ones.
Yeah.
So very, very good on the author. Anything else that you want to say about this section before we move on?
Uh-oh. Just that, you know, if I had received a gift in a box like that, I would have cracked it open and been like, hey, this is really cool that you got us a gift. I wonder what it is, you know, and open it up instead of like leaving it closed. Leaving it closed until they get back to the ship, and then still not even bothering to open it up, just setting it on a shelf somewhere, apparently, so that these, you know, little Trojans can jump out of it like it's a giant wooden horse.
Yeah, I agree. And well, anyway, that's something that I would have thought maybe they would have picked up when they transported up as well.
Yeah, we're detecting two really small biosigns.
Yeah, extra life forms are being beamed up, because wouldn't you have to say four to beam up instead of two?
Yep.
Perhaps not.
Yeah. Well, we'll forgive him that one. Although I want to get into those two soldiers that beam up with them in the next section, but there is something a little weird about them.
All right. Well, I'll wait to hear your theories about these guys until we get to this next section. So we're picking back up on page 15. This is the comic says this is part two, and we're starting with what I think is a really great opening shot of the Enterprise. We're finally getting a really well-drawn, well-proportioned Enterprise from a really cool angle. Really dig this shot.
And I love the background, too, with the sun and that, you know, sort of kind of looks almost like, you know, the Milky Way in the background. And I'm guessing that's the planet below them.
Yeah, that dark, swirly black and purple thing.
Yeah, it's a really cool composition.
It really, really is. So finally, nice to finally see a great shot of the Enterprise again that we don't have to pick apart because the proportions are all off.
Right.
But all right, so let's see. Uhura's down on the planet, and she's talking with the president a little bit, doing some brainstorming. And while the Enterprise is up in space approaching the sun, using a special anti-radio wave shielding to protect the inhabitants of the ship from the harmful radio waves. So Sulu attempts to raise something called a radio energy analyzer dish, but it jams. So Scotty volunteers to go outside and repair it wearing a special protective suit. So he's out there, he's walking on the outside of the ship, and he's struggling to free the dish, but he finally is able to get it freed from its housing. But just as he does it, he winds up falling down and kind of crumpling to the ground as if he was hurt. So Kirk quickly jumps in another one of the suits and goes out to the outside of the ship to rescue Scotty, but finds an empty spacesuit where Scotty was. So he grabs the suit and brings it back inside, and they discover, upon further examination, that a very tiny little Scotty is still inside the suit, shrunken down as small as some of the people on the planet below. So Kirk examines the suit and finds that there's a rip in the fabric that must have happened while he was trying to free the dish, and that was enough to allow the dangerous rays to pour into the suit and cause Scotty to shrink. So Spock warns Kirk that Scotty is shrinking much faster because he was exposed to a much higher concentrated dose of the rays, and at the rate his body was shrinking, he may become microscopic in size very, very soon. So at that point, Spock says that the very bacteria in the air will menace him as much as prehistoric mammoth would us, and they must act at once. So here we're getting a little foreshadowing of what we saw on the teaser page. Aha. So Dr. McCoy constructs a small kind of glass dome and puts Scotty inside it to protect him. And not long after that, Scotty shrinks so much that he is no longer visible to the naked eye. So McCoy has to pull out a special apparatus in order to see him, but they know that he is going to be safe because the sterile atmosphere that he's in doesn't allow any bacteria or other microbes to get in there. So he should be perfectly safe. But just then, our two Kujal spies who we saw who were hidden in the box that they gave Kirk on the planet below, these guys by the name of Imarta and Dello, rush out of their hiding place and attack the air hose that leads to Scotty's bubble, making a little bit of a hole in there and allowing something to get in. So McCoy grabs the two of them and puts them in a storage box and repairs the hose, but says there's no way of knowing what kind of microscopic matter might have floated in. So we're going to stop again here and talk a little bit about what was going on. So there was another captain's log here, and I'll quickly read the captain's log. I should have read this when we started, but forgive me. It says, captain's log, stardate 1924.9, en route toward the sun of the planet Kujal, where we hope to find the key to the mystery of that shrinking world. So once again, we're kind of mimicking the TV show in giving a kind of a catch up as we start the next part of this. It was kind of like coming back from those commercial breaks. But so the ship, as it says here, the ship has anti-radio wave shielding. That's the first time I think I've ever heard that. But it's interesting. So does that mean that no radio waves can penetrate the outside of the ship? I guess that's what it's.
I just kind of kept choosing to read it as anti-radiation shielding rather than, you know, that specific, you know, size of electromagnetic radiation, you know, that makes up the radio.
Fair enough.
And yeah, I mean, because they've got to have stuff like that, right? You know, because the ship is going to be bombarded by cosmic rays and, you know, all sorts of, you know, high energy stuff that just exists out in space, right? Sure. And so, you know, but it is interesting, right? Because they don't know what the deal is with this, you know, particular radiation, as I'm calling it. And so they don't know what properties it has, and therefore they don't know if their shielding will protect against it. So it makes sense. I'm okay with it being a thing that was already, you know, built into the Enterprise, and them not being certain whether or not it'll help protect them.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. I'm so used to, you know, shows like Next Gen where they're always configuring the shields to do other things.
Right.
So I wasn't really sure if the comic intended us to believe that. I know this came out way before Next Gen, but they didn't do a lot of this stuff in TOS. So I wasn't sure if the comic was intending to make us believe that the ship had some sort of built-in protection against these rays, or if this was something that they kind of configured on the fly to protect themselves.
I just kind of read it as something built in, but yeah.
Page 16, panel 1, there's that RE analyzer dish that they mentioned. This is another part of the ship, piece of equipment that I don't recall ever hearing about before. So neat little bit of a gold key cannon for the ship there. Some other apparatus that we have available.
And maybe it's just me. I want to get your take on this. Because we see it, right? Because Scotty's out on top of the ship, you know, walking up to it, and he has to, you know, climb this little dome and everything to get to it. Is that on top of the bridge, do you think?
I was wondering that myself, and the proportions on that frame, this is, by the way, if you guys are following along with us in this comic book, this is page 17 for us, probably 16 for you. Panel 1, there's an image of Scotty walking up to this dome where this dish is on top of it. But to me, the proportions are off. That doesn't look big enough to be the dome on top of the bridge. And I thought the dome on top of the bridge was transparent.
Well, yeah. And so that's what I'm saying, is that dome that the little disc thing pops out of is the dome on top of the bridge. And what Scotty's doing is he's walking on the top of the bridge to get to it.
I want to think it's below. I want to think it's the bottom of the saucer section.
Oh yeah, the little glowy disc part that's on the bottom center of the saucer. Is that what you're thinking?
That's what I was thinking.
Probably
not. I mean, they would have drawn it upside down, maybe. But I was thinking that that's where it was, because I my brain does not think this is the top of the bridge. Although maybe that was the intention of the artist, but I don't know why this dish would be on top of the bridge, and why the dome would be so small. I would think the dome would be a lot bigger than that.
Yeah, I don't know, but it is cool that we actually get to see an EVA that much.
Yes,
I think we can both agree on.
I do like that. That's really cool that we're getting to see that, and I like the fact that Spock and Kirk are watching Scotty. Mm-hmm. Inside and kind of telegraphing everything that he's doing as well. You know, they're always doing a play-by-play. Kirk is talking about, it's jammed all right. Look at him struggling. I wish I could communicate with him.
Captain Exposition strikes again.
Yeah. And of course, Spock has to tell us that the radio signals wouldn't get through the foil. So Scotty's got a special suit on that has anti-radio foil gear.
Oh, you know, I didn't notice that before.
So that, to me, means that radio waves are a really big problem in Gold Key.
Apparently.
Because they have suits that are specially made to have anti-radio foil on them so that you can walk in these radio waves and not be shrunken. So does that mean that they knew already that radio waves would shrink people? That's why they had to protect themselves from them, by making these special suits?
Or maybe it's because of, you know, when they encountered grays. And they had the foil on to keep them from stealing their brain waves, right?
Oh, yeah, it's a tinfoil hat. Yeah, tinfoil suit.
That's right.
I like where you're going with that. How come we never see grays in Star Trek?
I don't know.
So, yeah, I again, as you said, I love the fact that this is the first hull walk we've seen. We've seen them outside the ship.
Yeah, I think you may be right.
Floating in space. We've seen that, playing space ball. But this is the first hull walk.
We did see one shot. I forget which issue it was on, but there was one where there were like two people out messing around, like doing maintenance or something on one of the nacelles. Do you remember that?
Yeah. Yep.
But even then it was like, they weren't, it wasn't a walk. It wasn't like, you know, that kind of Star Trek First Contact kind of thing.
Your magnetic boots on.
Yeah. They just used their rocket packs to get straight back into the ship. They were floating, you know, so it wasn't walking like Scotty's doing here. and it's the walking that I appreciate.
Yeah, I do too. And there's a great shot on page 18, the first panel. You see Kirk standing on the hull of the ship over the crumpled up suit. I really dig that shot. That's really neat. And these spacesuits look quite a bit different than some of the other spacesuits we've already seen. Old Key. So,
but then these are also special purpose suits, apparently, right? Because they've got the tinfoil shielding or whatever.
Exactly, but they don't mention anything about the boots being magnetic. We just though assume that that's how they're able to stay attached to the hull.
Yeah, you know, I mean, if that kind of technology was normal to you, you probably wouldn't mention it either, right?
Probably not.
But I do love though that he's in the boots.
Yeah, I love that he's in the boots, and I can't look at page 18 final panel without cracking up laughing. Seeing Kirk poking his finger through the wiggling space suit and wiggling it. That, and it looks really dirty to me. Doesn't it? It looks like he's doing some sort of a lewd gesture with his finger. Because we don't know exactly where that hole in the suit is, but it sure looks like it's around the waist area.
Yep.
Oh, man.
Oh, yeah, now we know what really caused the hole.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, and Scotty's like, and he's naked and hanging out inside the boot.
yeah, just for added comedic effect.
Yeah, and, you know, there's, on page 20, I think there's some really, really good illustrations of McCoy here, especially in the third panel, where he's looking at the glass dome and you see a close-up of McCoy's face. I think that really looks like DeForest Kelly to me.
Yeah, and even the page before that, you've got a good likeness of DeForest on the first panel, and then good depictions of Kirk and Spock on the last two panels of that one.
Yeah, good close-up there. Yeah, especially the intense Spock one, the last panel.
I totally agree. I feel like this is where, you know, he definitely spent a lot of time getting those faces just right. And it's probably because of the fact that Scotty's shrinking, we have to see, you know, kind of close-ups of them because they have to seem large.
Oh, good point. So I like this. It looks like a vacuum cleaner hose.
Yes.
Attached to the little dome.
I there's a little thing about that, though, that kind of confused me, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, Scotty gets put in there so that it's a sterile atmosphere and everything. There's no microscopic hoobajoobs or anything. How does he get in there without introducing more?
That's a good question.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And especially because there's only one hose going to it.
Yep.
So presumably that's where the air is coming from, not being sucked out, you know, into, right? Because, if it was like a vacuum and he just plopped him in there, then, you know, he'd die pretty quickly.
Yeah, there's no air exchange in there. There's no air exchange. So how did they suck out anything? That was if they just put the dome down on top of him and then sucked everything out, they would have sucked him out too, probably. I mean, that would be a hell of a vacuum inside there.
Yeah. And you notice that conveniently, this is left up to our imagination because in one panel, Scotty is literally in McCoy's hand.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the next panel, he's in the dome. So we never get to see how he got in there.
We have no idea. We just have to figure it out for ourselves.
It's the magic of plot.
It is. The magic of Gold Key. And speaking of the magic of Gold Key, one of my favorite things about this issue is on page 20 in the second panel. I love the fact that that because Scotty is so small, his text has to be really small, too.
Yes. Yeah. Which kind of makes sense, right? You know, if you were smaller, you'd be moving less air, so you'd be quieter.
It is, but it's still all in capital letters, so he's yelling.
Yep. Yeah.
And
with the...
Oh, I love it. And that was brilliant.
They still don't use periods. It's all exclamation points.
Yes. Oh, God. I love that. I love that. So great. So anything else before we move on to the wrap up?
Well, it's funny you should say wrap up because that was the last thing that I wanted to mention. Well, not the last thing, but the kerchief that McCoy gives him, you know, okay, yeah, it looks a little silly because it's, you know, polka dotted and all that. But I thought it was kind of a nice touch, right? That,
yep.
Okay, you know, they give it to him and he's wearing it. And then as he shrinks, like as, and then we get to see that he's shrunk, he's torn off bits of it.
Yes.
To make it still useful without, you know, just being, you know, a giant blanket that he's kind of lost in. So I thought that was a nice touch. And then the other thing, I think this will be the last thing in this section that I really wanted to mention, is that the soldiers, all the way back at the beginning of this section, they're saying, well, how can we stop them from completing this mission?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because they don't want the ship to return to Kujal.
Right.
And, you know, supposedly turn them into slaves, getting into that backstory that we never got again. And so they're even specifically talking about how, you know, even our small weapons can pierce a tube or melt a wire, you know, something that would stop the yeah. ship from making it back. And yet, what's the move that they make? They fire at the tube in the little sterilization dome,
yeah.
which wouldn't have any effect whatsoever on the ship. Why did they do that?
I have no idea. I was hoping you were going to bring that up. That's why I didn't bring it up. I thought that's where you were going. And yeah, it made no... I was fully expecting them to, you know, be in some sort of a system in the ship and, like, take out navigation or something by, you know, shooting the inside of the control panel and the bridge up or something like that.
Yeah. And in fact, when I first read it, the RE dish or whatever it was... I thought that the reason that it was jammed, we were to discover, was because of them.
Yes. Yes. God, that would have made so much sense.
Mm-hmm.
That
mm-hmm.
would have made so much sense, but...
But it wasn't. We find out.
It was not to be. Shame.
Yeah.
But yeah, it seems like they had a good chance to actually complete their mission, because no one knew they were there. They could have gone unseen for... I mean, they could have gone unseen forever. You know, no one would have ever known they were there if they just, you know, mm-hmm. stayed inside the walls or inside whatever, you know, consoles or places they were able to hide. But no.
Yeah. And instead, they shoot the hose.
Yeah.
Dr. McCoy learns of him and sticks him into Omri's cupboard.
Exactly. It's all over. So they were completely ineffective. And, well, that's a shame. Very inept. Yep. But, you know, this is the cool part. You know, this is the part we've been dying to see, moving on yes. to the next section. This is the part that was teased on the teaser page. It is miniature Scotty versus a giant microbe, and there's some really cool artwork in here, starting on page 22, which this is some of my favorite stuff I've seen in Gold Key so far. I love,
gotta
although
agree.
I have some serious issues with this creature.
I think we may have the same issues.
Yeah, let's hold off on talking about that until we get through this. But as we know, the there was a hole shot in the hose, and of course that did exactly what McCoy supposed it would do. It let in some microscopic particles that are now going to start to menace poor Scotty.
Mm-hmm.
He's smaller than a grain of salt, and there's nothing. He sees nothing in there, but just then, this monstrous germ appears. Scotty doesn't really have any place to run, so he keeps moving around trying to avoid this monster as what appear to be, well, to him, large rocks are falling. He thinks that they're boulders, but they're actually just little pieces of dirt because, you know, he's so tiny. So Scotty starts to use those pieces of dirt as rocks to attack the giant germ that's after him. And it's quite an epic battle that goes on here. And sadly, this epic battle is not nearly as long as Kirk's battle with the spaceships earlier.
Exactly, yeah.
I think this would have benefited from being a little bit longer, but it's still pretty
good. Totally.
It's still pretty good. So just as Scotty emerges triumphant from his battle, he topples what he thinks is a boulder on top of this giant germ. This needle appears out of nowhere. It's Dr. McCoy. sticking a giant needle in to rescue him. And he pulls Scotty out of the dome and puts him on a glass slide. Just as Spock says that he has a solution to this problem, they've made an anti-shrink ray, an experimental anti-shrink ray. So they begin to fire that at Scotty, and within seconds, he begins to grow large again.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. So, sorry. So, of course, yeah. Scotty is big and he's naked, so he's asking for some clothes. And just as the Enterprise, they return to Kujal, and Kirk tells the president about their breakthrough and about General Kwai's treachery, sending the two soldiers to sabotage the mission. And he promises to send enough of the anti-shrink machines so that they can restore their entire population within a year. And she's very grateful. And General Kwai is going to get a special punishment. He will be the last person returned to full size. Spock is happy with that punishment and says it's a marvelous punishment for a big man like him.
Big man in quotes.
Yeah, in quotes.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of un-Spock-like moments that
I can't wait to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
Later back on the Enterprise, Scotty, Kirk, and Spock are discussing the events, and they have a kind of a comedic ending, or the attempt at a comedic ending.
Yeah, attempt, I think, is more like it.
So they're talking about Scotty saying that he'll never make fun of another man's size again. And Spock says experience is a great teacher. And Kirk, this is painful to read, but Kirk's...
teacher? This kind of experience is a full professor.
Wow. Yeah. Not quite as funny as I guess the author thought it was going to be.
Yeah.
But I respect the fact that they attempt the humor. So again... this is the end of the comic, by the way. The wrap-up was really that quick. It was just
over. Two pages, that's it.
Yeah, it was done. Now, really quickly, I wanted to roll back a little bit, though, and talk about this awesome yet problematic microbe monster.
Yes. And
I think you know where I'm going with this. I love this thing. I think it looks really, really mm-hmm. cool. But why does it have a mouth and a tongue? An attempt to eat Scotty. That does not make any sense.
And why does it make sounds like, you know,
exactly. It's a microscopic organism. It does not have vocal cords. It should not be able to make any sort of guttural noises, nor should it have a mouth and a tongue. But I understand for the purposes of illustration, it has to look like a monster. And Alberto, I think, did a fantastic job with it.
Really good job, yeah.
It looks really, really great. And I wish we saw more aliens and monsters like this in these
comics. Yeah, I almost wish that this scene hadn't been in this comic and had instead, you know, that this creature was a normal-sized alien.
Yes.
That, you know, that they encountered at some point, and that was, you know, sort of the threat of whatever imaginary issue that was.
Yes. Absolutely. That's the kind of monster that I would have loved to have seen, like a whole planet of these things.
Yeah.
You know, they beam down to some planet. Next thing you know, you got 20 of these things surrounding them.
You know, and especially because they're like, you know, they're all gloopy and, mm-hmm. and you know, so they could have easily just sort of, you know, absorbed or trapped or whatever.
Yeah.
The crew, like, I mean, there's so much they could have done with that.
Mm-hmm.
But instead we've just got, you know, it's a microbe and Scotty has to throw rocks at it. Although I did think it was interesting, right? Because the rocks, right, are just little dust particles.
Yep.
You know, and I thought that was a kind of a nice touch because, of course, there's going to be dust. And, you know, if you're going to have microbes in there, then, of course, there's going to be dust. And I love how, like, one already turns into kind of a hill. He's able to push boulders, quote unquote, off of.
Yeah, there's a big pile of dust. And yeah, almost reminded me of the Gorn fight from Cestus.
Exactly. 3. Yes.
By the way, everybody, Ian's got a bell that he's ringing. So in case you wonder what that was. Yeah. So
only $6 at Office Depot. Get yours now.
Office Depot is not sponsoring this podcast.
No, but if they want to.
So
just throwing that out there.
Another thing I just picked up on is this: Scotty is doing something that Kirk was doing on the planet surface, especially during this fight scene. He's telegraphing everything. Page 22, panel 2, has just what this is just really weird dialogue. Scotty is standing there, and this is when the microbe monster first falls in, and Scotty says, and I quote, "Wait, what is that falling toward me? How can there be anything else in this sterile world, oh mine?" I mean, why would he say that?
Right.
And then the next panel, glory be, a microscopic monster, some germ that broke through the sealed system.
I don't know. Maybe he can't see well out from the inside, but wouldn't he have seen that hose rupture? Because, I mean, you know,
heard something.
If you go back to the panel where it does get ruptured, 21 or 20 for everyone else, compared to Scotty, it's a fairly sizable explosion.
It is. And he definitely would have at least heard it if he had not seen it, right?
Yeah.
So, I'm not sure about that, but he does essentially telegraph the entire fight.
Right. Because it's not enough that we just have an awesome, action sequence. We've got to have dialogue describing the awesome action sequence, too. Or monologue, excuse me.
The shame of it, in my mind, though, is that if these word bubbles weren't there to cover up some of this artwork, I think it would have been an even cooler sequence.
Yeah, I have to agree with you there.
Because there's a couple spots where some of the bubbles overlap the monster.
Mm-hmm.
And especially the scene where Scotty is standing on top of the boulder mountain with the rock in his hand, which is what, page 24, panel 1.
Yeah, which is a great shot. And then there's like, he's standing on a couple boulders and his own word blur.
Yeah, exactly. So I think that would have looked, that if that panel had no dialogue over it, it would have been epic.
Yeah,
it would have been an epic.
Totally
shot.
Agree.
So that's a shame. But McCoy wears something he calls micro specs.
Yeah.
Which is, a microscope fused with glasses.
Yeah. I can get behind that.
Fair enough.
I think that's a neat little bit of technology.
More devices being invented for Gold Key.
Mm-hmm.
So pretty cool. It looks exactly like a pair of goggles with a mad scientist might wear. Or a supervillain.
Right.
With a big apparatus off of one of his eyes, his right eye.
And it's funny because, you know, McCoy plucks him out and puts him on a glass slide. Right? Like he's going to put him under a microscope.
Yeah.
And I kept, my thought went back to high school biology, right?
Oh.
And I remember I was once, you know, for a lab that we were doing, we had these little paramecians, you know.
Oh, cool.
And I was like just enthralled. This was like one of the first times I ever got to see a living thing that small through a microscope, if not the first. I think it might have even been the first. But the point being that I was so enraptured by it. I was like, oh, let's see if we can magnify this even more. And so I zoomed in. And I didn't realize how far I was zooming in, and the lens of the microscope pressed against the glass and squished my paramecium. And I kind of expected, as soon as he said, "All right, Scotty is on this glass slide," I was like, "No, just be careful."
Yeah, don't squish him.
But instead, he takes him over to a anti-shrink ray.
Yes. That they have just built, I guess.
Right. Which is fast.
Right.
Wouldn't you say?
Insanely fast.
Yeah.
I guess Spock was working on this thing all during Scotty's epic battle.
And you look at the thing, it is not, you know, a small piece of equipment. This is...
Oh, it's quite large.
Yeah. This is something that looks like it was built into the room. So where did they build something that big and with a new technology, you know, the anti-shrink ray, so fast?
Maybe it's something they reconfigured.
Yeah, I guess that would have to be
the medical device they already had.
Right.
Yeah. That's my take on it. That's the only thing I can think of, because that it almost looks like a drill press or something. It's humongous.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is weird, huh?
Yeah, and it makes weird noises too. When Scotty starts to reappear, it makes a noise. Plip. PLIP. Plip.
Yeah. And then that last panel on that page is a little weird as the Enterprise zooms away. We see three word balloons emanating from the Enterprise. One saying, hurrah! The other saying, yahoo! And the third saying, yow!
Yeah. And the Enterprise itself makes a sound, swoosh.
Swoosh. Yeah. It's a... I mean, I like the shot of the Enterprise. They could have just left it without the word balloons. Maybe just added a, you know, triumphant, in a caption, triumphant, the Enterprise zips back to Kujal or something, you know.
Yep, that would have been
something better. Short and sweet.
Yeah, I guess we're supposed to believe that they're kind of partying inside the ship because they brought Scotty back, so.
Yeah, well, apparently they are, because it seems everyone's got party fever, especially Spock in that last page.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, on the second panel of that last page, Spock laughs.
Yeah. It's a very stilted laugh, too. Yes.
And with the hosel separating my dashes.
Yep. Yeah,
that's definitely incorrect. So they're laughing because Scotty is naked and he's growing back to normal size and he is requesting clothing because he's popping out of, as he says, popping out of the little loincloth ripped
piece. Yeah, this silly thing.
Yeah, so, Spock and Kirk both find that hysterical.
Yeah, and it was also, I thought, a little weird how he's like, get me some clothes, Mon. Like, yeah, he's Jamaican or something.
Yeah, what is that about? That's not a Scottish accent. A little bit of weird. Well, you know, there's another strange dialogue choice back on page 24, when you see McCoy looking at the needle. He says, Scotty, yes, I can see him clearly through these microspecs. He's struggling like a demon.
Yes. Well, you know, all of the demons that he has encountered before have all struggled.
Yeah.
So as far as McCoy knows, that's just a thing that demons do. They just struggle.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Fair enough. So that pretty much wraps up the story. Anything else you want to add before we give our non-canon essential votes?
Well, yeah, I mean, I want to make some comments on the really rushed ending, because it is super duper rushed. The battle between Scotty and the microbe, I thought, was just right in terms of pacing and everything. The right number of pages, right number of panels, that was fine. Three pages. You had mentioned earlier that, you know, you could have cut back on some of the pages of just, you know, just alone, just Kirk getting swarmed and all that by the rockets. And they should have taken those pages and given that to the coda of the story.
Yep.
You know, because we don't even get to see them. They're just talking about, yep, we figured it out. And they're like, oh, thanks. And that's it. Right? Like, there's a whole two panels where they're back on the planet. And that's it. And it's just too fast.
It is. It would have been much nicer, I think, of an ending to see, you know, maybe the president and a couple of her aides or something brought back to normal size, kind of shaking hands.
Yes.
With the Enterprise.
Exactly.
To say, hey, you know, give us a happier ending. Because as far as we know, like, we're going to give you the devices and it's up to you guys to to grow yourselves back to your normal sizes again. So, yeah, we'll see you later. We're out of here.
Yeah. And, you know, and it would have been nice to see, you know, aside from just thank you, Captain, which is what the president says, to have her say, you know, something along the lines of, you know, we were really distrustful of you at first, but you've proven yourselves to us. And, you know, now we're in your debt, blah, 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 you know, something.
Right.
Right. It's just, here you go. We're going to go make a really bad joke now.
Yeah. And you know what? This reminds me a lot of the ending to the prior issue that we did, I think a couple weeks ago, where it was the planet of the children who were diseased.
Oh, yeah.
And yes. The ending was, okay, we're going to have Starfleet ship you guys a bunch of that herb, and we're out of here. That was pretty much it, right? This is exactly the same ending.
Yeah, and wasn't that one written by the same guy, too?
Oh, you might be right on that.
Maybe that's just a thing of his. But either way, like, there was a lot to like in this issue, I thought.
Definitely. From an artistic standpoint alone, there was a lot to like in this issue.
It's interesting, the whole shrunken people angle.
Mm-hmm.
I think they you haven't got to it yet on the animated series episodes, but the animated series has an episode like that, the Territon incident.
Yep.
And, you know, I would say that concept is probably done better in that. That's fine, though.
Mm-hmm.
This was definitely an enjoyable issue, even though there were just a whole bunch of things that had me scratching my head. But that's just kind of me anyway. You know, this was not a bad one.
No, it's definitely middle of the road. I think that the big highlight for me is the epic battle between Scotty and the microbe monster. I think that was, despite the telegraphing and the awkward dialogue, I think that sequence is awesome from an artistic standpoint. Yeah, I loved how it was done. The pacing was really good, as you said. I thought the creature was phenomenal. I love that.
Yes.
You know, again, you know me and my non-humanoid aliens in Star Trek. So that's an automatic win for me. You know, I wasn't really fond of the length of time it took to get to the ending. Of course, the pacing of the entire issue itself was way off. But there are some really interesting concepts in here. I kind of wish that a different word was used to describe the waves.
Waves
threw me off a little bit. But I like your thought of reading it differently. trying to excuse it that way. But I would probably have to go essential on this one for a couple of reasons. Some of the new technology that they introduce, the dish that's on the outside of the Enterprise.
Mm-hmm.
I like that. That's pretty cool. So it's a new apparatus that's part of the ship that we've never seen before. So that's some interesting gold key cannon. Who knows if it'll come up again, but always neat. Some of the medical devices that McCoy has, the little specs that he uses, the micro specs, are pretty cool. I like the fact that they had this anti-shrink machine on the Enterprise that they're going to now mass produce and ship. The concept that radio waves can shrink people, strange, interesting, weird. I don't know. Probably will never come up again, but I kind of like that. And of course, I love the microbe monster. I like that in the Star Trek universe, microbes are voracious monsters with little mouths and tongues.
And tongues.
Yes, that's phenomenal. So, mediocre issue, but I'm going essential on this one for several reasons. So, what about you?
Well, you know, going back to the very beginning, we had the cover that seemed really strange, right?
Mm-hmm.
We had a red shirt who we now know is Scotty on you know, the head of a needle being looked at through by an eye that's, you know, looking through some sort of lens. We've got a Kirk getting taken down by rockets and tiny people overlaid over a sun. All those elements came together in this issue, maybe not in the best way that they could have, but it was a good attempt. They introduced a lot of really interesting ideas. Like you said, the monster was great. That whole sequence, I think, is it made up for a lot of the episode of the issue. And the spacewalk was also really, really cool, I thought, and something that we don't see often enough, in my opinion. And, you know, all in all, it was, you know, like I said, it was not a bad issue. And, you know, all the concepts and everything that it, they introduce were pretty believable. Yep. And I think added an interesting bit of texture to the Trek universe. And so I think my vote as well is essential on this one.
Oh, awesome. Oh, you know what? I have to throw one more thing in there.
Oh, what's that?
And that's Uhura's character moment.
Oh, yeah.
Uhura's character moment of the bravery and heroism for volunteering to be the hostage that stays behind on the planet as the insurance policy for the people of Kujal. I think that was awesome. I'm glad to see that they gave Uhura that type of a moment in the comic. It's been a long time coming. And I hope that we see more. And hint, hint, we will see more. So awesome. So double essential on a gold key. That's really cool. Very, very cool. So all right. So wrapping up, we are the tricordertransmissions.com. If you're looking for us on our website, we're also on Facebook, facebook.com/thetricordertransmissions, Twitter, TTT_pod. My personal Twitter is J_Ben. Where can we find you?
Twitter at Ian128K as in kilo. And if you want to follow along with the updates that I do on my comic, mostly I've been doing writing right now, but if you want to follow along anyway, it's at In the Starfleet. And that's it.
Very cool. You can also find us on redbubble.com. If you're looking for some merchandise, check out redbubble.com. Search for
some really good merchandise, guys.
Very good stuff. And if you would be so kind, I know we've been asking everybody to do this, so if you're getting tired of hearing us say this, we apologize, but if you would be so kind as to go over to iTunes and offer us a rating, that would be wonderful. If you only feel like putting in a star rating, that even that would help. Just to get some get our numbers up and get us out in front of more people and help us build our audience. Yeah. We would be very, very appreciative. And as always, we love talking to you guys on social media. Thanks for everybody who chimes in on our episodes every week on Facebook and Twitter. Always, always a pleasure to talk to all of you guys out there. And Ian, it's been a pleasure talking with
you. As always.
All right.
Yes.
We will be back next week with another episode of the Tricorder Transmissions.
Same Trek time, same Trek channel.
Hi there, thanks again for listening. If you're cruising the galaxy looking for even more Trek talk, why not visit our good friends Bill and Dan over at TrekGeeks.com? They've got a great podcast that covers a wide range of Star Trek topics, so you're sure to find something you'll love. And if you're in the mood for some awesome tunes, then you really need to head over to 5YearMission.net. The guys are writing a song for every episode of the original series, and each one is absolutely brilliant. So that's TrekGeeks.com and 5YearMission.net. Check them out today.